Hello and welcome to Dice Punks, a tabletop role-playing podcast where we focus on playing full campaigns in less well-known systems. This week in episode 43, our nobilis try to figure out how successful their rescue mission was. Hello and welcome. I'm Adam, your friendly neighborhood game master, and joining me are...
Hi, I'm Drew, and I'll be playing Leorian Cathar, the V-Count of Tempo, and, you know, hopefully in a relatable way, guy who's increasingly overwhelmed by everything.
Hi, I'm Robin, and I'll be playing a fatigued and sensory besieged Nessa Crate and all the facets of herself therein.
Hi, I'm Dez, and I will be playing Romnet, who... need some coffee after that.
Yeah, I imagine so. Well, excellent. Thank you. I don't think have any character stat growth this time, but I did neglect to mention at the end of last time that we had one mortal XP awarded to all characters. And then, of course, Romnet, you get a roll for a bonus mortal XP.
So I do that. Paranines.
That'll do it. You may have a mortal XP. This one, though, is perfectly ordinary. Remarkable only in how unremarkable it is.
Wow.
Well,
I'm typing that one in as meta unremarkable.
I appreciate your precision. That brings us, I think, to our recap from last time, which this week comes to us courtesy of Lissa.
We found Apatia, hellbent or darkness sent, depending on who you ask, on her recovery. Mm-hmm. Romnet, Leorian, and myself plan to retrieve our friend from the bottom of the ocean. It required much. Blotting out the sky with an eclipse to nettle power, raising the ocean floor through the gracious help of Tuhil and Fewa, redirecting the resulting tidal wave from our lands to Sirtha. You know all of this already, but I touch on the impressiveness of what we did to underscore its apparent cost. We would have spent longer crossing the newly formed path were it not for Leorian's gifts of tempo. He borrowed time playing his newly repaired drums to quicken our pace, but it still took us a day and a half, even with miraculous intervention. We were all aware that an attack could come at any time in virtually any direction, so the massive shapes trailing behind us beneath the surface of the ocean were hardly a surprise. We seemed to thwart them by leaving behind shadow figments of our group and quickening our pace even faster. After what felt like a small eternity of marinating in a bitter brine of my guilt, we finally found her, hunched over and apparently insensate. It felt too easy, so my approach was cautious. But when I finally saw her, my blood went cold. Nyx, or Dagum, had taken her eyes. Didn't matter which. Both will pay. Leorian escorted us to Bor, where I'd hoped to have Dosk tend to her. Our ministrations, however, drew the attention of Nyx, who assailed us with an eternity of drowning but not dying, the same punishment that she had inflicted upon Apatia. The sensory assault briefly dissolved Dosk into his chancel and was likely unbearable for my friends. The only thing that softened the blow on my mind was the refuge of my rage. Rage at Apatia's punishment, those who administered it, and, most potently, rage at myself for not doing more to find her, for being too self-conscious to pray to her. I'm sorry became my mantra through gritted teeth. And it brought about something of a respite in the sensation, forcing Nyx to redouble her efforts in the form of painful synesthesia. But Anixa's proximity was an opportunity. I told her the truth, that I had felt worse than her petty sensations. With the help of those conscious enough to aid miraculous strength, we penetrated Nyx's auctoritas, and I inflicted her with all the solitary, shattering despair of the previous overgod upon finding themselves triumphant and alone. Giving Nyx exactly what she wanted, the sensation of being the only god, was enough to stop the assault. I was just in the process of catching my breath when Apacia regained consciousness and exclaimed, "Take me from her."
Excellent. Thank you. Well done, as always. And that is exactly where we pick up this time, in sort of the momentary silence after that remark. Apacia sort of propped up. We had elided, I think, in that the treatment that Dosk was able to give her has not restored her eyes, but rather looking into her eyes is now looking into a sort of vast dark void with a scattering of dim stars that does not move when her head moves, but rather her, you know, eye sockets pan across it when her head moves.
Mostly void, partially stars.
Good way of putting it. Somebody should put that on a podcast.
Seriously.
In any case, just to round out the image there of Apacia having sort of sat bolt upright on the bed, now sort of propping herself forward a little bit, looking in your collective direction. Dosk having been recalled by Leorian, standing there in his sort of sketched in part void form. And the rest of you still breathing rather raggedly. Imagine, Leorian, you are probably the worst for wear out of all of this, because you also had the repaying the time from the drum experience last time, not that long ago, and weathered the worst of Nyx's sensory assault. And now, you know, right on the heels of that, here you are. Apacia, you know, has sort of exclaimed, "Take me from her," in sort of a ragged way, and those words hang in the air as we rejoin the action, so to speak.
We intend to try.
She seems like she's trying to close her eyes, but they don't really do that anymore. And she takes sort of a shuddering breath and says, "You have to do it now. She's as far away as she'll be, but as long as I'm here and she's me, that she can get here. You can't keep her out while I'm here."
How do we go about that? I don't know. Let us know how we can help you.
I'm looking to Dosk as though for an answer. I try to ask verbally, and I probably just splutter.
In response to Lissa's question, Apacia sort of like grips either side of her little headpiece, you know, in tight fists, and, you know, seems to be speaking through gritted teeth. You can see her pointed canines kind of, you know, over the edge of her bottom lip, as I don't know. It just, you could kill me. That would work too. Surely one of you has a use for sensation.
That is not an option. Dosk, what did you do with Toheel?
I kept Toheel alive and tried to surround him with a sort of metaphysical nothing, but it was honestly mostly Ventis is doing to actually bring him in, since she was the one that he was sort of signing up with.
Should we try to summon Ventis? I mean, we can...
It sounds like we need an expert urgently.
I'm going to pray to Toheel.
Okay. What do you say?
Oh, great ally of the Deep Earth. we have rescued our friend, but we must in turn rescue her and her shard from her imperator. We need your strength and Venti's strength to help free her.
There isn't an immediate response. You get the vague sensation of divided attention that lets you know that you're not just speaking into the air, but you assume that Toheel will reply when he is able. You're not entirely certain what might be going on his end. In the meantime, Dosk is kind of muttering to himself a little bit, seeming to be trying to brainstorm something. His sort of sketched in void of a physical form is pacing back and forth near the door. Apatia has sort of relaxed a little bit and is now just sort of holding her head in her hands kind of to either side and seems to be trying to think way harder than she maybe is really equal to right now.
I don't know if this is how it works, but I would welcome you. Whatever I can do, I put myself to doing it, as Toheel responded. I don't think there's anything I can't do.
At this, Apatia sort of... At first, you perceive it as a lunge at you, but it's really more of a lurch. And she sort of grabs onto your shoulders and... She says, no, that's it. The red tooth, right? All you have to do is eat my heart, and you'll get the shard, and it'll be here, and I won't be, and Nyx won't have it anymore.
That's not an option.
We want you, as well as your ability.
We've managed to convert one other. He was mostly dead, but he works for our friend Ventis now, and that was previously under a different god, so it is possible without any of that nonsense.
As I'm closest to her, I add only, I meant I want a sibling, not a meal.
Dosk has stopped pacing, and his posture looks a little uncomfortable. He goes, oh... You know, I have a feeling that I know what, and it is more or less at that moment, Lyssa, that you hear back from Toheel. And Toheel says, sorry for the delay, a little busy, but Ventis has instructed me that all she had to do to bring me into the fold was for her directly, as the Imperator, to perform the Red Tooth Rite on me. And she pointed out that I don't actually have a pulse. I was unaware of it, but it'll give Dosk the ability to preserve Apatia's distinct form. But I recommend her being unconscious for the process.
Fuck. I turn to Dosk and repeat verbatim what Toheel said, almost mechanically, while clenching and unclenching my fists.
Dosk nods glumly and says, right. Well, I'm not really excited to hear that.
Preserve her form or preserve her? That seems an important distinction.
Toheel.
Yeah, Toheel.
He still feels like Toheel.
Is he?
Dusk says, you know, actually, when I was at the Confluence, I read a pretty compelling philosophical treatise that hypothesized, what if there was a being who from the outside appeared to have a rich internal life, but actually didn't? Would it be appreciably any different from someone who did? How would you need to treat that entity? It was, I didn't finish the book.
I'm looking at him as though this
matters
is the...
to the internal life. And there's no ability to determine that externally, so you're back where you start from.
Right. Yes, that is the gist of it. Dusk seems a little self-conscious on the tail of his outburst. Let me see. Already one chaos roll. In the meantime, Apacia's gaze has sort of gone a little unfixed. She looks a little vague. It's not clear why.
There's, like, no, they didn't hand you a manual, did they, Dusk, of, like, all the rights? Like, there has to be a way of changing sides without that, you know? Her way of just, like, I don't know, keeping anchoring her further? I don't understand.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would hope so, but no one gave me a manual, and the...
Apacia, how do you feel about this?
I understand, but also, you've certainly, you shouldn't actually want me around, and it doesn't matter. I haven't been good for you. I all the way back in Demacor, I nettled Dusk and Lyssa when they were helping me because Nyx asked me to, and you know, I got in the way. I wouldn't have a choice.
If you had a choice, would you do it again?
Well, of course not, but that's beside the point, because I don't. Any minute now, Nyx is going to show back up, and I won't be able to stop her, and whatever she asks me to do, I'll have to do, because, and I can't stress this enough, her soul is in me. I'm not separate from her. You're not separate from your imperators. You can only pry a shard away by chipping it off of the imperator. The only other possibility is, well, the red tooth right, and I don't have a problem with it. I would just as soon die to help you all out, but I can't eat my own heart. Or I guess maybe I could, but it probably wouldn't help.
That sounds difficult and probably not that helpful. Look, I haven't known you very long, and I don't know who you have or haven't been good for, but I'm not sure I've ever been good for me, and I still haven't given up on me, so I'm not going to give up on you. That didn't come out right. What I'm saying is we're going to... Okay, so Nyx is coming here, and that's why you're saying we have to do what you're saying we have to do. If Nyx came here, could we... This to Dusk. Win? On your own turf, do you stand a chance? Do we stand a chance?
Dusk folds his arms, and while you can't see facial expressions in his sketched-in physical form, you get the distinct impression of him kind of baring his teeth and grimacing a little. And he says, well, I won't have a better shot than here, but I think probably most of us are a little taxed currently. I guess we may not have a choice. Certainly the best thing to do would be to, and he trails off, the world blurs and you find yourselves all back on the grassland plateau of Bor, though Apatia and the bed she was on are still in the same arrangement as they were in the room. He goes, now I'm a little less vulnerable, at least. And it's, as you say, my stronghold. So, here's what I think is going to be best to do if she does come here. I am going to dissipate. I won't be a target. She won't be able to really attack me. But what I can do is I can, Dusk gestures at Leorian, get as close as I can to maxing you out. He sort of looks at Lissa and Romnet and says, I don't think I can get you direct help, but here's what I can maybe try. And Lissa is kind of looking around a little bit distantly, and she looks like if she was stronger, she'd be in danger of wandering off, but is still sort of just kind of leaning on her hands, twisting around on the bed. While Dask reaches into non-existent pockets, seems to fish around for a bit, but like strenuously, as though he were having to excavate something, and then pulls out two small, 2 inch to a side, perfectly black cubes. They are perfectly black in the sense that they are not at all reflective. You only know they're cubes because he turns them. Otherwise, they just look perfectly two-dimensional from whatever side you're looking at them at. He holds one out. Little too small, but somebody should do a podcast about that.
Sorry, it was just too very there.
Sure.
It really was.
Holds these cubes out, one to Lissa and one to Romnet, and he says, I've tried to put as much as I can into these boons. You'll have to tap them. I don't think you'll be able to just absorb it, but once you get them going, just use it until it's gone, and then you can fall back on your own strength, which I'm sure is plentiful.
If we manage to take care of Nyx, what happens to Envy and Apatia?
We try to make sure that Dusk pries that part of Nyx's soul off and takes it unto himself.
On this topic, we do have an expert, right? If we can kill a god, then there's an interval during which those who were bound to them are free agents.
Dusk sort of gives a noncommittal nod. He says, well, it's a little morbid, but human beings don't really die instantly. And Imperators less so. Even if you just
as
destroy the brain.
Seen or, any sort of drama has become aware.
Grievously you injure the body, unless you disintegrate it all at once, there's some parts of it that go on ticking for a bit. And so, yes, the death of an Imperator means the death of that Imperator's nobilis, but it's a process, not a long one, but it is one. So I'm going to funnel as much as I can in just a moment here to Leorian, and then I will do my best to locate Imbi. If I can bring her here, I will. If not, then I will try to be in a position to bring you to her should you succeed. I suppose time is of the essence, though, so... Godspeed. He shrugs, and then... is gone. With a pop of the rush of air. Apatia has sort of sagged back on the bed and is just looking up into the kind of anemic sky of Boar. Just sort of listlessly.
How?
Leorian, as Dosk disappears, you feel your temporary miracle points replenished. You can restore them to your replenishment points. 6, 7, 5, and 6, respectively, I believe.
Yeah. Woo.
Lissa, you were saying.
How do we kill Nyx? This is directed at Apatia.
Apatia sort of shakes her head a little bit and then looks over at you and says, I suppose I wish I knew. I mean, certainly it will involve getting through her Arcturitas and... she'll have to come here with her whole presence of spirit. She's night and silence and sensation, but...
At least two of three of which are pretty close to nothing.
True enough. She's got some other smaller... domains as well. Not that she has gone out of her way to fill anyone in on them.
Well, then we drag her to those parts of Boar, those parts that is of nothing, that are least like the night. We, for example, keep her out in the open. It's not day here, but it's not night. It is definitively not night. Extrapolating on this.
Don't keep her out in the open, because the night is all also tangentially related to sky.
That's true. I guess I don't
just
know whether
this put her in the tavern. Well,
taverns are night places if ever there were any.
Do you think we can lure her here in her fullness?
Apatia sort of shakes her head and says, her body... is Diamakor, or Kilata at least. It won't come here. I don't think this is a good idea. I think that you are being foolish. I, more than once, just now, I betrayed you.
You had no choice. And so it's no reflection on you, and I need you to understand that.
For it to be a betrayal, it has to be a chosen action. As it is, you are simply a friend who is compromised.
She makes no particular response to that. What was the other thing? Oh, that's right. I was going to ask for a roll.
figured as much.
Leorian, you have a decent chance at this. Sense plus eerie. 6 dice.
All right, coming right up. Seeing which dice have been behaving reasonably well here. In tests... That is a pair of tens.
Well done. Remind us, meaning me and also the listeners, you had gotten a little boon from Celiand, like the one that was given to Ramnet, and which has been left with Mott here since. I believe, if my memory serves, you still have that on your person. Is that correct?
I believe so. I think I showed it to Das, but didn't give it to him. Is that right?
That's my recollection. I just wanted to make sure I had it correct before I proceeded, because you, from wherever you have that resting, you feel it. You don't know, it's not warm, it's not vibrating, but you feel it all the same. It's something other than just a physical shape with mass.
I think I see where this something is coming from, and I retrieve the object.
Pulling it out, it is haloed in sort of a ghostly imitation of the light that accompanied Celiand. But as you behold it, it darkens. Not the light goes away, but the hue of the light darkens. And then all of you are aware in the next moment of Nyx's arrival. Because the sky doesn't go dark, but the stars come out in the sky. Still light, but you can see them. And you can feel the presence of an Imperator. Apatia flings herself off the bed and into the grass. And if you're watching her, you'll see her sort of roll to a stop and stay there. But chances are decent that she's obscured by the grass in the bed and have bigger things to worry about. Immediate responses.
Lady Celiand, we request your assistance.
All right. Ramnet, if you would please give me a...
If we're doing chaos, we might as well do chaos.
Chaos is fun. Why don't you give me a... I'm going to go a weird direction here. Charm plus eerie, 5 dice.
Nice.
I like that combo.
That's a good fun combo.
Has that combo never come up before? That's remarkable for this campaign.
All right. That's 5 sevens.
5 sevens?
Okay.
All right.
If we recall, it did make at least somewhat of an impression on the Lady Celiand.
Yeah, that is true. So, you give voice to your entreaty. Any other immediate responses to Nyx's arrival? Clock is ticking.
My first response is actually to turn to Lyssa and say, "Do you think Raymalus would answer the call? Are these favorable enough terms?"
As you speak, you see the words come out of your mouth. They're not images of anything. They're just the words, but what they look like in the air.
That's new.
Have you reconsidered your position, Nyx?
I snap away from Lyssa and toward Nyx, realizing that, oh, we're doing this.
The stars in the sky spin lazily for about the space of a breath, and then rapidly and swirl down from the sky. Not as though they are being pulled from the sky, but as though the sky is coming to you, or this part of it is. There are as many and more stars still there as this swirling motion touches down. And it takes on a vaguely person-like form, but it seems like more of the suggestion of one. Not sketched in like Dosk's physical form. This form isn't physical for one thing, but more like an elemental sort of suggestion. And, well, Nyx doesn't speak in words, but you nevertheless perceive that Nyx is primarily communicating to you, well, handily enough, her fury. There isn't a whole lot of lag time before everything around you begins to hurt. Looking at any object hurts your eyes. Hearing any sound or hearing silence hurts. The taste of your own mouth on your tongue hurts. The pressure of your feet on the ground, your clothes on your skin hurts.
Because this is fury, I want to do, I believe a major divination is free for me.
I believe so.
So the specific question I'm going to ask of the fury that I'm experiencing is if this is what specific flavor of fury. Is it fury? I guess I could elaborate. And I'm specifically trying to figure out if this is like the fury of betrayal, the sort of rage that comes from learning that a goal is not at all what it seemed once achieved.
This is the fury of injured pride. Nyx is angry that you were able to resist her in her previous visit. She is, after all, a goddess. And what are you? A blacksmith?
You've been lied to, Nyx, and not by me. That pull you feel is a lie. Even if you had everything you ever wanted, it would feel worse than anything that you can inflict on me.
Lyssa, I would like you to roll Sense plus Empathy, 2 plus a Master Die.
Okay. That's going to be a pair of tens.
As you talk about the pull, for the space of a few heartbeats, you feel it. You feel the pull as Nyx feels it. And you realize something. The pull isn't localized to any one physical place in your body, of course. It doesn't even feel like a tug on your heart. It's as though somebody has a leash and collar around your whole being, physical and spiritual both. And it's not as though a human being is tugging on it like you might pull on a dog's leash. It's like the other end, well, I'll use an anachronistic analogy. It's like the other end is caught in some sort of machinery. The pull is constant. It is inexorable. It is forceful and it is rapid. But you are not budging. And with a pair of tens, you gain a little bit of insight here, which is that Nyx is the imperator of sensation. And you don't know how long Nyx has existed, but the whole time she's existed,
she's been going a little bit crazy.
She's been feeling this more than anyone or anything has ever felt a sensation, because she is sensation. Knowing that it is an empty promise doesn't really change anything for her.
I pity you. You have all the might of a god and all of these exquisite sensations at your disposal, and yet you are still tethered to the same chain that we are, to an extent. Why not, if you wish to be the one god, why not make yourself the one that breaks those chains instead of inflicting the same suffering on your nobles?
Leorian, if you would roll 3 dice for me, please, and tell me what you get.
Oi, okay. That oi was not in character. Just how my brain sounds. No matches. High 6.
High 6, okay. You have just the barest premonition that something may be about to happen when Apatia lands on your back and bites into the joint of your neck and shoulder. In the meantime, Lyssa, you feel Nyx's fury redouble. It starts when you say the word pity. And you feel something akin to when you stand in the surf and it starts to go back out between waves, but in sort of the spiritual matter around you. Each of you can decide on one action to take. Let me know what it is. Chop chop.
I perform a ghost miracle on my blood to slow the tempo so I don't lose much of it.
I like this use of it. Done.
I'm going to just keep talking.
Sure.
I'm picturing you having this dialogue and I'm in the background with like waving the paper around.
Fighting for your life. Yeah. Nyx. I'm going to give you the option of choice, which is more than you've given your nobles. You're in the losing allegiance right now. You can join our cause, be the god that helps us destroy the throne and sever your chain. Or you choose death.
Ramnet, anything in particular?
For what it's worth, Nyx, I don't pity you. You brought this upon yourself, and you are a big girl. But you should also be reasonable unless you're actually insane. You can help us. You can help yourself. Particularly given the knowledge that you aren't going to succeed alone.
The motion of the stars whirling around snaps to a halt for just a second. And that gathered force and that gathered momentum is coiled like a spring. And then all at once, you feel and see simultaneously the spring breaks, tension unreleased, and golden light pours out from behind Nyx's sort of nexus there. The stars fade, and there stands Celiand, serene and smiling. Leorian, Apatia falls bonelessly from your bleeding shoulder into a crumpled heap on the ground.
I plan to check on her, and for that matter my shoulder, but first, as light pours into this place, presumably quite powerfully, I perform a lesser preservation at the realm level, so that this light will stay. After all, the whirling stars were motion, and motion is contrary to nothing. Night is a time, and time, the movement thereof, is contrary to nothing, so I simply take what is currently happening and make it keep
happening.
All right, that's going to be 3 realm miracle points.
I figure I couldn't do that at the domain level since I'm affecting the whole dang realm.
Correct. Yeah, realm was the correct choice there. For sure. All right. Celiand gives a very small, not quite mocking bow and says, I heard you. It looks as though I was in time.
Indeed, thank you.
Will you object to my... And she sort of peers, very slightly leaning, around Leorien. Will you object to my taking the Fallen's protege under my wing?
That depends on the terms of the taking, I suppose. We made some not insubstantial risk to ourselves to make sure that she wasn't harmed.
Point of order question.
Mm-hmm.
The Fallen's champion, as in Iznix Fallen?
Hmm. Quite.
This was an out-of-character question.
Oh, sorry.
I assume
you
that's
don't
what
censor.
You meant. It just seemed very Lorien to sail past that and be like, but our friend.
With follow-on question of, is there any power available in the air to grab?
Hmm. None.
Okay.
Celan sort of says, well, there's a way, if nothing else, of preserving her life. It is going quite quickly.
Nix Dusk, is
I will say,
then.
Dusk, get Imbi.
There is a beat, and then... And Dusk appears sort of with a not unconscious, but seemingly very weak Imbi in his hands. And Celan goes, oh. Thank you. To Dusk.
What would be the terms of keeping her with us?
The terms?
That had been our intent before your gracious intervention. We could...
We continue, as we discussed, to work to undo the throne.
Yes, I
if
expected as much.
If that is a course that you both think possible and find amenable, I understand that there is a great deal in those ifs. But if you would like to work together with us, then we certainly would not take your help amiss, and I suspect would. I will look to the others. Feel that a gesture of goodwill is in order?
I would like them to choose you, too.
That would also be ideal.
Their previous imperator was a monster and left them with little choice.
I see. She appears to ponder for a moment. Celiand glances at Apatia, glances at Imbi, and says, if they are lucky, they have minutes left, and neither seems to be in an incredibly alert state. I do not think it's practical to get their direct consent. If you wish to save their lives, as I see it, you have two choices. Allow me to adopt them, taking it on my word that they will be well treated, or consume their hearts.
Does well treated include a measure of free will?
Well, it does sound like it would be hard to give them less than their previous imperator, based on your account, but, well, I would be happy to allow them to serve me however they see fit. But the purpose of a nobilis is to serve their imperator.
Of course. And if the service includes attempting to destroy the throne?
I see no reason to prevent them from doing that at this juncture.
I will look to the other two.
I would that we could ask. I mean...
Could I do a creation of fury on a patient to try to get her conscious?
A smelling salt of fury?
Mm-hmm.
You can... she does not actually currently have an Octoritas, so you don't even have to try to worry about, piercing that. But it doesn't seem to have any immediate effect.
Lissa, what do you think? I'm not sure I could live with it if we had her exchange one yoke for another, but if the lady speaks in good faith.
But if the other up.
I'm not comfortable with it. We had made plans to ensure that she would be able to remain with us, and that's what she had consented to. And that is no slight against your help. I hope you understand the caution given the circumstances of their previous imperator. Of course.
I commend your dedication to your friends, but with that, I think that I should probably be, well, absenting myself from this gentleman's chancel. It's rather impolite of me to be here in the first place.
Your help was very much appreciated, and... took great strides, and
she.
If I may speak on my Imperator's behalf, if I may be so bold,
Dosk, the rudeness makes a is far gesture outweighed. With his elbow to give consent to that.
the rudeness, any such as it is far outweighed by the saving of potentially our lives and the Chancellor alike. So, thank you.
To both of these comments, she graciously inclines her head, and then the light sort of. Folds in on itself, and she is gone. Leorian, maybe one beat after she disappears, you notice that the Boone's light continues to deepen in hue until it is a sort of inky black, and it sort of stays there for, you know, a handful of seconds. You are under the impression that there is a lot of time pressure if you're going to do anything for Imbi and Apatia. So, quick thinking, what do we do?
Save them, Dosk.
Dosk sort of...
Whatever power you need is yours.
Nods, taking the appearance of a shaky breath and sort of gestures everybody... you know, to kind of close in as he walks over to where Apatia is with Imbi in his arms and goes, all right, well, it looks like, you know, everybody's still relatively full. So if you'll hand me those little cubes back and we'll see what we can. And that is the last thing that Lissa or Romnet hears. Leorian, the stone from... Celiand in your hand with its, you know, sort of inky black glow, the light sort of snaps back to the stone and it looks as it did before, but when it does, your two companions each crumple to the ground beside Apatia, and where Dosk is laying Imbi down, Dosk sort of freezes and glances side to side and then looks up at you, Leorian, and goes, what just happened?
I was hoping you would know. There was another boon, and it went to the Big Vale stairs. Are they connected? Is this a withdrawing of power? I have no better guess.
Dosk pauses for a beat and then goes, and then looks back up at you and says, all right, I'm about to send you somewhere, and makes a little gesture with his hand And
the moment before he can, I cast what miracle I can in the time allotted on Apatia, so that whatever he's going to do, he has more time to do it.
All right. You find yourself between one blink of the eye and the next, seated at a table in the Tides Repast. You are watching a very middling concertina player give a rousing rendition of a song that you haven't heard this specific one of, but you've heard this type of song before. You also find that the side of your left thigh is wet, because you didn't appear at an empty table. You appeared at the table your sister is sitting at.
I, without saying a word, gesture an apology and, try to find a place where I will be less conspicuous, because you can't speak during a performance, even a mid one.
So you get to go to stand up.
Yes, exactly. Oh, yeah, exactly.
As you stand up, she simultaneously rolls her eyes and backhands you in the sternum, like with a sort of a soft slapping noise, and gestures at the table, and then points at her ale and pushes the tankard towards you and crosses her arms and looks back at the performance with a, you might call it, seething combination of annoyance and impatience.
Yeah, I endeavor to refill her tankard. Relieved to have something to do that I absolutely can achieve.
You walk as unobtrusively as possible over to the bar with the sloshing partway full pewter tankard. You sort of gesture with it to the barkeep, a older fellow who you recognize, but you don't really remember his name. It feels like it's on the tip of your tongue, but no, that's the other guy. You're not sure. He fixes you with an intense look for a moment, and then you see recognition dawn. And he does sort of a silent pantomime of a snort and turns away from you to take another order.
My face drops, but my smile does not waver. I put the tankard down on the bar and wait with acid politeness.
Acid politeness is a very good turn of phrase. Eventually, he accepts that you're not going to calmly go away. And he, comes over and, sloshes some ale into the tankard and holds out his hand very pointedly, for the, requisite payment.
As we know, there's a very abstract system for money in this game. I think I don't have much money, but I don't have no money. Is that correct?
Or wealth do I have zero, no money? You have no spendable money. You can afford nothing.
I make the universal gesture for put it on my tab, which is a wave of the finger around the head and then an amiable shrug.
He looks like he wants to sort of dash his little polishing cloth on the bar, but the song is still ongoing, so he simply clenches his jaw and glares at you in a way that is trying to kill you, and then turns to help someone else.
My smile beams at him past when he turns away, and I go to deliver the ale.
You arrive back at the table as the song ends, and there is a polite round of applause as the concertina player sweeps a unnecessarily dramatic bow and then leaves the stage.
I find some seat so it doesn't seem that I was giving a standing ovation, because that would be too embarrassing.
You sit back in your original chair to be able to give Firagi her drink.
Yeah. I say hello. It's good to see you face to face rather than that unpleasant business before. Sorry again about that.
Quite. You got here unexpectedly.
I did, to myself as well. When divine travel of one kind or another occurs, there isn't always time to explain the whys, the wherefores, the where-tos.
Of course, of course. Well, so nice of you to drop in, Your Holiness.
No, I try not to look like I love that. I suppose, I mean, you don't have to, you're making fun of me, aren't you?
She regards you levelly and takes a long drink and then says, "Now, why ever would you think that, dear brother?"
It's good to see you well, my sister. I know I've been away too long and too suddenly. And did I mention too long? But I'm here now.
Indeed. For any particular reason or just to haunt me?
Well, the haunting comes free. I imagine that isn't why I was sent here. Unless the powers that be have taken an interest in how annoying you find me. Which is possible.
She sort of takes a deep breath and says, "It is good to see you well, however unexpectedly. But we should probably leave before you're seen by people you owe money to."
I didn't exactly pay for the ale, so you make a good point. Yeah. Sure. Some things never change. Should we go?
She has already stood, is finishing the last of her ale, and walks towards the door without looking to see if you're following.
I am. If I catch the bartender's eye, I give him the Taraxan equivalent of double guns.
He pointedly does not look at you while you leave.
Okay.
Romnet. Lissa.
Yeah.
Avia. Something is very wrong. You feel disembodied, and multiply so, as though you are floating not just outside of your physical body, but outside of something else as well. There's a metaphorical pane of glass between you and all of your existence prior to this. And yet, you do feel connected to each element of your being that you are separated from, which is why it hurts so much when something is wrenched from you. Now, I am going to make some assumptions here. But you tell me if they are incorrect. So, Romnet.
Yes.
I'm going to assume that as it is the first and most powerful of your shards, murder is dearest to you.
Yes.
Lissa. Damn it. I'm going to assume that the Forge is dearest to you, but that Fury is dearest to Mavia.
Subconsciously, okay. Fury is dearest to all.
In an agonizing eternity, your shards are torn away from you, and you feel yourself dying. But before you can be extinguished entirely, one comes spinning back to each of you. Romnet, you retain murder. Lissa and Mavia, you retain fury. The others, you know not where they went, but you know that their departure was painful. Fortunately, that is the end of the metaphysical pain. You do, however, become aware of physical pain at that moment, and it is enough to overwhelm your awareness. You recede again into sort of a briny unconsciousness. Leorian, you have followed Firagi out of the Tides Repast and over to, well, it would be incorrect to say that the cliffs of Nema have like an edge. You don't walk up to sort of like the sharp precipice, but there is a point at which there are walls on roads, and they don't go all the way down to the sea, but it's a little bit nebulous. And so you go to sort of the highest traversable point by the public, not too far from the Tides Repast, and Firagi leans on the wall overlooking the sea, and you see that it's closer than it used to be. It's probably a good 30 feet higher up the cliff than you usually see it, not to the point where an ordinary storm would endanger the lowest construction on the cliffside, but well closer than it used to be. She looks out. It's windy, as it always is. It's gray, as it usually is. It's a little chilly, as it often is. She doesn't really say anything. She just leans her elbows on the top of the wall and looks out over the sea.
You know, there were times I wasn't sure I would get to smell this air again.
She looks kind of sidelong at you and tries for unadulterated exasperation, but ends up with exasperation tinged with amusement. And she says, "Well, I'm certainly happy for you then."
Salt and I for you. You seem to be doing well for yourself.
Yes, well, I was always a little bit less apt to wander, but, yes, it's worked out fairly well. I've done fairly well. I'm very good at singing.
You are. And you always have been.
Far
you're,
better.
You're tending towards sarcasm, but I just mean it with all my heart, and I am happy for you if you can possibly accept that.
Leorian, I can accept it. I just wish that you...
Me too.
I'm glad you have some kind of purpose, at least. You're an excellent musician, but you're a terrible trooper. A good performer, but not a very good showman.
I think I'm a terrible demigod, but I think I can be a good friend.
You know,
I've made some very good friends, and I think they're in trouble, and I would love nothing more than to rush to their side right now, but I think my imperator, technical term, that's the god I serve, he's in the equivalent, the divine equivalent of a doctor doing a delicate procedure, so I don't think I should disturb him, and yeah, you know, I have found a purpose, I think.
I'm glad, and it seems like it's important, maybe not even just to you, but I guess I just need to know how much this is going to catch up our family. We're distinguished here. We're happy, for the most part, here. We like what we do. We mostly like each other. Hell, God's help us, we like you. But this is big and weird and scary. You caused an eclipse? She gestures out over the sea.
Not alone.
Of course not. But the point still stands. When you were just gone, it was frustrating. But it was comprehensible. What should I expect? Do I need to buy a sword and armor? Do I need to build a shrine to you in the house?
I really wish you wouldn't.
Oh, thank God.
No, I mean, you should just prepare for things to get stranger. Is the sea coming
closer. It's like the salt shoals here. It feels so close.
Well, it does seem to be getting higher, although nobody has ever been able to spot it doing so. It just gradually has been climbing. We're worried about it, of course, but there's very little you can do about the sea. You just have to deal with it. So, people have been packing up carts, moving things to their attics, quietly preparing for the worst and hoping for the best. Nothing you can do anything about, I assume.
Well, that's just it. That's the change. You, the family, you're perfect here in Nema, but there's a world beyond, as you know better than most of the family. And I think maybe there is something I can do about it. I think I can forestall the worst. Ultimately, it's just that even if we don't arrive at the worst, things will get worse, or at least a lot stranger, before they get better.
Well, I guess that's about what I expected.
I'll protect you as best I can. I'll do everything I can to keep you safe from... Look, you can take care of yourself, but not when it comes to the sea and the stars. And that's my department now, so I'll do everything I can.
She leans back, resting her elbows on top of the wall and sort of like looking out backwards over it. And then she turns back to you, sort of brushing hair out of her face. She says, "Would it help if we built shrines? Because it seems like you could use all the help you can get."
I don't think it, strictly speaking, wouldn't help. It's embarrassing, but I do think I and especially the god I serve, who is the god of nothing, by the way, do derive power from belief. Yeah,
she
well,
busts out laugh laughing at the god of nothing. She has to stand up from the wall and sort of like hold herself up on it until she finally goes, "You know, whichever way that actually parses, it's very funny. Of course you would end up a vassal. Ah, well, what's the god of nothing's name, and how would we build a shrine?"
I am elated and embarrassed that it's never occurred to me to think about how to build a shrine. I say, Dosk. With an exhalation that sounds like a prayer itself. I think back to Bor, and I think the best thing you could possibly do is to clear out a place. It could be here by the seawalls, it could be within your home or within the tides of your past, but put no thing in this space. Do not even enter it. Stand near it and think on nothing. And as for me, I mean, I'm, as I may have mentioned, the demigod of Tempo, so your worship, if you mean it to be, need only be what you're already doing.
She sort of nods with a smirk and says, "You never can make anything easy. Although I guess in this case, it's more your god's fault. People like to have a statue or something they can leave little offerings at or say prayers to. So, of course, the right way is to just clear out a space. All right. Well, you know, we'll get right on that, I guess."
"Oh, place a statue. Just the empty space near the statue will be the actual shrine. People don't need to know that."
She laughs again. She says,
"I describe in detail what the statue could look like. I say, imagine the only person you've ever met who dresses worse than I do. With an enormous beard."
We'll fade out on that explanation, as delightful as it is, for just a moment, but I assume it's going to take a good little while.
As long as you need it to, for sure, yeah.
And we return to Bor. We have the slow dawning of consciousness again in our nobilis there. Lyssa, your eyes creak open. You feel gray. You feel the way that you feel with the moment you go from being sick to recovering. But what if it was the sickness of dying a mortal death and having 2/3 of your soul ripped away? You know, you feel like you could probably stay sitting up if somebody pushed you up, but everything else beyond that is an unimaginable chore. Ramnet. Well,
can I see Apacia?
You can through the tall grass. It's sparse enough that you can see through it. Turning your head, just like rolling it on the ground in the direction you imagine that Apacia will be in, you can see the midnight blue of her clothes and very little else, but she's there.
Does she appear live?
Well, squinting and maintaining your gaze for a moment, you can't really see anything specific in terms of life signs, but there is kind of a lot of blood on her clothes.
I try to say her
comes
name.
Out. And there's no particular response, although Ramna, this will be the first thing that you hear, is this atonal groan from Lissa's direction. You have awakened in a similar state of disrepair, sprawled on the ground and bore.
Not dead yet. I will allow Adam to be the one to translate that into what actually comes out of my mouth.
I think it's probably something like, but in any case, Apacia, you can hear that. But the next thing you hear,
Apacia,
is that? Listen, you can hear that groan, but the next thing that you hear is Dask's voice, sort of unsteadily going, "Oh, good. You're awake. I wasn't sure at all that that would work. Try to rest some. I've contacted Ventis, and we're going to try and fix you up as best we can." Oh, boy.
Is Mott dead? Too? Or?
Oh, I don't know. Could be.
I suppose I could try to contact.
You could.
Or, like, I will sort of poke at any... To what divine am I connected?
Hmm. Well, directing your attention in this way does reveal a couple of things. You are weaker than you were. Your domain... your primary domain of murder is intact. Your domain of sacrifice is missing. And your spirit has been reduced from 3 to 1. Ooh. But it is, in fact, connected to Dask.
Oh, well, hey, boss.
How about me?
Your domain for Fury remains as it was. Your domains of darkness and the forge are gone. Your spirit is also reduced to 1, and your realm is reduced to 1.
Thanks, Des.
What?
You summoned a god killer.
Yeah?
My poor divine experience points.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, I sympathize with that mood.
However, Alyssa, you are connected to Dask and no longer to Mott.
This does put me in a really interesting position.
Can I check on Varric?
You can't really flex your spirit right now. You're not entirely sure if Varric is gonna be there or not.
He's lying. Okay.
Yeah.
Dusk?
Yeah.
Have a suggestion. Uh-huh. I seem to be a bit weaker than I was and may not be able to hold as many anchors.
Oh. Yeah?
I most sincerely suggest, because it would be funny and bitingly, viciously inverting of your usual relationship, that you take your grandfather off.
Oh, well, I would have to, I'd have to give him a shard for that. Fair. I don't really think I want to.
Also fair.
If there's ever anyone who shouldn't live forever.
In the event that I am unable to maintain that connection, it may be that it might hasten his end, and, well, I would be sad about that only in proximity to the strategic damage it would cause, and also to, you know, you.
Great. Yeah, it's all new to me. Thanks for letting me know. You haven't...
Which is to say, out of character, if it comes down to it between Croesus and my brother, I'm keeping my
sure,
brother.
Very reasonable.
One of these is more strategically important.
Right,
but...
right.
Is Varric alive? This is a thought very strongly directed at Dosk. Probably closer to the level of mentally shrieking.
Sure. Dosk, neither of you can see him. He's actually raising his voice from a little ways away. Not like dozens of yards, but well out of your field of vision from where you're laying down. You can kind of hear a little bit of a rustle in the grass as he sort of like jolts. And, he's like, I'm gonna check, and goes quiet for a moment and says, yeah, he's alive. Yeah.
Is he okay?
Not sure. He was either asleep or passed out. He's not conscious right now.
Bring him.
I'll see what I can do. He sounds pretty uncertain. And honestly, he's got a little bit of that voice going on that people have when they are...
humoring the dying?
Well, they're when people are like trying not to be nauseous, he's got a little bit of that going.
Yeah, eating hearts tends to have that effect based on personal experience.
In any case, you hear the of his departure, and moments later, Apatia stirs a little bit to the side of you.
Can I try to reach for her? How far away is she?
She's out of arm's reach, but if you were to extend your arm and she were to extend her arm, you could touch hands.
I try to do that, because I imagine I can't really still pronounce anything.
Not particularly well, no. You sort of flop an arm over, and after an interval, she returns the gesture, sort of claps a hand down on yours. It's cold, but that's not actually
to be expected.
Terribly noteworthy in this case. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's not really an opportunity for conversation per se, but you do hear some rustling coming through the grass from the direction of your feet. There was no pop of Dosk's arrival.
Is it Puff?
So it is unclear who this might be. In a sense, yes, once the rustling stops, it is Feywa leaning over and Puff sort of popping up over her shoulder. And she gives a little bit of a I would hesitate to say like a warm smile, but a smile at any rate, only slightly strained, and says, "Well, it looks like you've been through it." Looks at all four of the figures in the grass and says, "Nothing for it, I suppose." And closes her eyes and stands up. And you feel sort of waves rolling off of her, not just power, but sort of miraculous effect. And you don't feel immediately 100%, but you feel a lot of your basic faculties return to you. You can do things like form words and sit up.
Well, I will sit up without relinquishing Apatia's hand and pointedly not look at my chest.
Hey, Fela, do you know if that was Mott punishing us, or if that was an attack on Mott?
She looks and says, "You know, to answer getting the important answers first, I suppose. As far as I can tell, it was both. It was Mott punishing you, and that being used as something of an opening."
By whom?
Well, I have only circumstantial evidence there, but I would assume that it was by Celiand.
I had a feeling.
I had an interesting encounter very recently with Celiand, actually. She blinked away quite suddenly in the middle of something of a contest. You see, I was attempting to make peaceful, well, non-violent contact with Cirtha, and discovered that Celiand was already, well, present. But our conversation did not go, I think, according to her plan, and she seemed very upset at my intrusion. Something seemed rather disruptive, I suppose, about me showing up unannounced. One of the nice things about keeping this aspect is that I can move somewhat less detected than most of my peers. In any case, the Imperator version of a scuffle broke out, and I wasn't doing especially well, but she simply vanished. And then, not long afterward, well, I found myself asked to come here, and I can see why. This has been a busy day, but at any rate, I can find no sign of Mott. And, well.
So, Celiand appears to have killed two gods today.
Right? And more if you include, and I gesture to my hammer and the bloodstone there.
She nods and says, yes, she seems to be making her play, I suppose, although I don't know exactly what for. I have, however, a useful piece of information from the encounter that we had recently with her. I think I have learned another of her domains. And there is simultaneously the of Dosk arriving, and then barely a fraction of a second later, the bloom of light that announces Celiand's presence. And Celiand provides the answer that Feywa was leading into with a genuine and warm smile on her face. She says, "Yes, I suppose the cat is out of the bag now. Among other things, I am the goddess of betrayal." And that's where we'll end our session. So, everybody can get one mortal and one divine XP.
Much needed. It must be said.
It must
that
be said.
That is,
it must needs be remarked.
That is some really valuable salt for that.
Rub some pink Himalayan in that, that cut.
I'm sure we'll have plenty to discuss and debrief in our Dice Peaks, which we always record right after these, and which you can hear by heading over to our Patreon if you feel so inclined. But that'll conclude this session. So thanks for joining us. I hope our players and listeners enjoyed it as much as I did, and that you'll all join us again next time. If you're hearing us now, then you probably know where to listen to this, but we can be found almost any place one can listen to podcasts, as well as on the wider web at dicepunks.com and on Twitter as @dicepunks. With that, I think we're ready to say farewell. Say goodbye to the kind folks at home, players.
Thanks for listening, and, you know, always try to be kind, and except in the moments where that's impossible, and, you know, recognize those moments.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and be mindful about who you share your business with.
That's really good advice.
Thanks for listening, folks, and even if you cannot always trust those that you need to, you can still persevere, despite them.
Despite and to spite.
Yes.
And as the poet once said, darkness has fallen, and you all laid down to die.
Thank you for tuning in, dear listeners, and stick around through the admin stuff for Alyssa's Line. Songs in this episode, Theme of the Dice Punks in its acoustic version, were written and recorded by the Viscount of Tempo in his element, Drew. Cover art is by Joanne, who has appeared on the podcast now and again. Check out her work around the internet where she goes by Anything Sews. Site design and graphics for DicePunks.com are by Robin, the player behind Lyssa and Mavia, the Nobilis of Darkness and Fury. Rain and the One Roll Engine it runs on were created by Greg Stolze, whose work can be found in a frankly astonishing number of places, but I'll point you toward GregStolze.com. Nobilis was created by Jenna Catterin Moran and can be found alongside much of her other cool stuff, tabletop role-playing and otherwise, at afarandsunlessland.wordpress.com. Links to both systems and authors can be found on the Punk Grimoire section of our website, dicepunks.com. Thanks so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, well, it's reward enough on its own, but if you're so inclined, you can help us out by rating and reviewing us wherever you listen to us, telling your friends who you think would like us to give us a listen, and even by heading over to our Patreon at patreon.com/dicepunks. We have fun rewards available to backers, including a patron-only Discord and access to the Dice Peaks after show for episodes 1 and following. Regardless, we hope you'll tune in again, and remember, subtlety is for cowards.
As a smith, I have my questions about alchemy, of making gold from base lead. Solid, unyielding metal to malleable fluid is one thing accomplished by heat and sound science. But alchemy, well, I'm forever a skeptic. I often struggle similarly with descriptions of love. It's reductive to derive emotions from the heart. An organ that is a life source, true, but one that merely pumps blood through mortal flesh. To say that love is grounded in the heart is making gold of lead. Emotions like love are debatably exclusively chemical in the brain, but love in its most pure sense is miraculous, based in the soul as much as shards of reality. For this reason, I've always hated having emotions as expansive and dynamic and explosive and marvelous as romantic or platonic love grounded in something base and visceral like the heart. Because I have loved many so furiously that my heart seems an inept container. I am capable of working great miracles beyond reckoning, which has taken the miraculousness out of them. But love, at least, remains a delicious mystery to me, and one valuable enough not to divine the origin of that particular gold. I don't believe in alchemy, but I do believe in love. And I love you, dear friends and lovers and allies and family and listeners all, with more than my mere mortal heart.